I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to a brand new interview series on Collider. This is Collider Forces. A lot of you out there are very familiar with Collider Ladies Night. What you might not be familiar with is that I inherited that title, and that title has always felt mighty limiting to me. And it's something that has bothered me quite a bit, and it's something that I've wanted to change. But wanting to change something and then actually taking the action to make that change happen is completely different. And I have to credit my very first Collider Forces guest with inspiring me to take action, make that change, and make this show a reality. Liv Hewson.
Hello.
I'm so happy. I'm so happy this is happening.
I'm stoked to be here.
Oh, I was telling you to. I'll let everyone know the dirty secrets.
Please,
here.
Tell them.
So we spoke at the Yellow Jackets premiere,
mm-hmm.
where I had a belly full of Prosecco.
Same.
A little drunk.
Yeah.
We had a conversation. That conversation led to me sitting in an Uber at like 2 o'clock in the morning, where I typed out on my phone a whole big proposal,
mm-hmm.
fired off that proposal in the middle of the night, and the fine folks that I work with approved it by midday the next day, and here we are, Collider Forces.
I love that. I remember talking to you about it.
But I was hoping you wouldn't remember talking to me about
it.
I
want everyone to know, I didn't hear the bit about that being the domino until getting here today. That's fantastic.
I mean it. The only thing we need to do, you're going to get introduced to the Dice Tower soon.
Amazing.
This is my handiwork here.
It's great. It's beautiful.
So the reason why we don't have a new Dice Tower yet is, like, I can't decide if I want to switch the game for the show.
Okay.
Or come up with a new, like, this is supposed to look like Jurassic Park.
Okay.
So maybe I should commission a new Dice Tower.
What would you do?
Like, what would a Yellow Jackets Dice Tower look like?
Like a big tree, with skulls all over it.
Yeah.
Covered in symbols and
you
blood.
Know? Like now ideas are going through my head. I kind of want to do that. But first, you need to play your round of dicey questions. This is where every single interview on this show is going to start.
Mm-hmm.
There's a die here. I've got 8 random questions here. And the first 3 questions you roll are where we start with this interview.
Okay.
So, do the honors.
Do I roll it on the tower?
Down here. Okay, looks like we're starting with a 4.
Okay.
Oh, that's one of my favorite ones right off the top here. So, this one is Zombie Apocalypse.
Okay.
You are on the set of Yellow Jackets.
Yes.
There is a zombie outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pick 2 co-stars to team up with. Who do you choose that'll give you the best chance of surviving?
Jasmine and Steven.
Okay, why?
Jasmine and I work together very well and communicate together very well, and she's incredibly pragmatic and very smart and very determined. And, Steven always has the hookup somewhere. It's like he knows what restaurant to go to. Like, he always, like, lives in the nicest place. He, like, will be going somewhere and he'll know what the thing to do there is.
Okay.
He's sort of like a down-low schemer in the best way. So I think those 2 would be perfect.
I've never heard anyone give that as a reasoning, but it's such a smart approach.
Yeah, it means that your logistical muscles are working all the time.
One of my favorite ones I've heard recently is Samantha picked Courtney because she's tall and she can help her reach the high things.
Incredible. That's you know, but Sam's height, she would be thinking about that a lot.
Yeah, I get it. All right, roll number two.
Okay.
All right, I'll do a good job. How about that?
Seven?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Oh, this is an easy one. You got a softball. This one's wrap gift.
Okay.
What is the best wrap gift you've ever received or given?
Oh, you know what? Actually, it was Yellow Jacket season one. Ella got me a packet of corn nuts.
Corn nuts? Okay. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, because there's a scene in season one where after the plane crash, I'm eating corn nuts and she tries to make me stop.
Okay.
And then I say, you want to save the corn nuts because she left me in the plane.
That stress, I'll get to it. That mm-hmm. scene still stresses me out when I rewatch it. One more roll in the tower.
Okay.
I don't even know what I hope you're going to roll right now.
I don't know what I did.
Six.
Okay.
Six. All right. I like this one, too. This is survival skills. So,
okay.
You as in real you, you're in a Yellow Jackets type situation. The plane goes down. You're stranded in the wilderness.
Right.
I want your greatest asset, the thing that you bring to the team that'll help everyone survive. But then I also want your greatest weakness, the thing that's going to do everyone in.
Yeah. Okay. So I know a lot of useless facts. Pretty much in any given situation. My brain's a bit of a sponge. I read a lot. I would know a lot of, seemingly useless information about, the kind of trees that grow somewhere. Or,
Oh, that's not useless, though.
Would not when the plane crashes. Then it's actually handy if I can, identify what direction we're facing and what the season is likely to be doing. So I feel like my capacity for hoarding trivia would come in handy.
I like that. But now your greatest weakness, the thing that's going to screw everyone else over.
Oh, man. What would my fatal flaw actually be? I don't think I'm very good at asking for help.
Oh, that's a serious one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think in my heart of hearts, I always kind of knew that in a zombie apocalypse kind of situation, the sort of cardinal sin of getting bitten and then not telling anybody. I was always I just probably would end up doing that. It's I've always sort of understood whenever a person does that.
Every once in a while when I do big group ensemble interviews, we play a zombie apocalypse game where I give everybody superlatives and they have to tell me which cast member best suit, the first one to die. But one of them is always who is going to be bit, but then not tell anybody.
I know. And I know it's bad. I'm really actively trying to get better about it. And I am. But
I'm impressed by how deep you went with that. Because I always think of the stupid shit. I'm going to run out of contact solution and then I won't be able to see and I can't help everyone.
Yeah. I'm allergic to bees.
Ooh.
So if a bee stings me, I am fucked, and then so are we all.
You have a real reason to be. I'm afraid of bees, but I'm not allergic. I'm just a baby.
I don't think about it ever until I'm out, hiking somewhere or, a little bit removed from civilization, and then I suddenly realize how scary it is. It's the second a hospital is further away than half an hour, then I'm it is bad to be allergic to bees. That's right. I forgot.
Yeah. I try to think about that when I'm acting like a child near a bee, but...
Just hang it out.
Doesn't stop me. All right. The first question for all Collider Forces interviews will be this. What is the movie, the show, personal experience you had, you name it, that first made you say to yourself, I absolutely have to be an actor and nothing else?
Oh, fuck. What actually was it? I think what I'd normally say in response to this is that I was in a school play when I was 9 and it was a school play about, it was a compilation of a bunch of Greek myths mashed together, and it was a musical. It was very sweet.
The through line was
Pandora's box opening, and then it was different horrors coming out of Pandora's box, spawning off into different Greek myths. I played Perseus, who is the guy who kills Medusa with a reflective shield. And I got to draw a mustache on myself. And I was like, it's going to be this forever. It's going to be this forever, I've decided. And I never changed my mind after that.
I'm just really impressed by how cool that school play sounds compared to the garbage that we were told to do.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
I appreciate that. All right. So you make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to taking the first step towards becoming a working actor, when you wanted to do it, what did you think was step one? But then ultimately, is that step something you would recommend to a newer actor who wants to break into the business, or did you discover something that's maybe more effective along the way?
Well, first of all, I would never recommend anything to anybody because I don't think, none of it's a guarantee at all, and there's no one way in, and I never can recommend anything to anyone because it's there's no promises ever. So I trained with a theater company as a teenager in my hometown for a few years, and that's sort of where I learned how to, like, do it. But then in terms of turning it into a job, the step was, like, taking a bunch of workshops that were with casting directors, sort of, like, learning about the businessy side of things. And then I was on one of those that was in L.A., and that was my first time visiting. And then, like, truly, like, the showcase at the end of that workshop, the woman who is now my manager was there, and, like, that's how we met. But I can't recommend that to anybody because that's insane.
That's why I love doing these interviews and certain questions I'll repeat every single interview because it just emphasizes that every path is different and every path is okay. It's whatever works best for you.
100%.
Oh my, I have so many follow-up questions to that. First, so you said that those workshops taught you the business side of things, as well, which is very, very unusual. Can you share maybe one fact that you learned really early on that, you know, you wish was information that was more readily available to up-and-coming actors?
That's a good question. I just think you can't hold on too tightly to any idea of how something's going to be. Like, it's a mistake to cling to the idea of something needing to happen a certain way, because you'll lock yourself up. Like, on the smallest level, even in a performance standpoint, where it's like, I have to be doing this way in order to be doing a good job, you won't discover anything and you won't surprise yourself. And then on a macro level, it's like, unless my career is happening in X way, it's not happening at all, and I've failed, then nothing's going to surprise you and you're not going to be good at it because you're not going to be relaxed enough to be open to anything. So I encourage people to get as zen as possible as quickly as possible, which is that, like, nothing is guaranteed to you at all. That is fine. And do everything you can anyway, but, like, let go as much as possible.
My brain is exploding with follow-up questions that I don't want to forget. I want to continue down that thread, though.
Yeah.
From the performance perspective, can you give us one example, whether it's Yellow Jackets or something else you did, where you had boxed yourself into a certain idea and someone gave you a note or suggestion and it made you realize, oh my, there's this whole other path I can pursue with this beat?
I don't know that I have a specific example. But I just think the times where I feel myself enjoying the work the most, or the times where I feel myself engaged in it or doing the best, is when I actually don't think about what it would mean for me to be doing something a certain way at all. Oh, no, I do have a specific example. Okay, so a mentor of mine, who is the artistic director of the theater company I trained at, she always said that when you're acting with people, when you're acting together, it is everybody's job to make everybody else look as good as possible. And then if everybody's doing that, it's going to be great. Because, like, it doesn't matter what you've got going on. This is a collaborative thing. And if you're looking after me and I'm looking after you, we're going to be okay.
That's such a good example. That's such a good example of something that literally every single person in this business, no matter what your role is on a production, should know.
Yeah, I think so.
I want to go. I'm shocked right now that I remembered this question. You had brought up your manager a little early on, and we never really talk about the actor manager or agent. It's so important, though, because when you find the right person and they're supporting your hopes and dreams in a way that doesn't make it feel like a business relationship, but rather like doing what you can to help someone pursue their deepest passion, it can be completely different. So what did you see in this person at the time when you first met that signaled to you, this is someone who's going to support me every step of the way and get me the things that speak to me the most?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it is funny that, like, you bring up that, like, we don't talk about it very much, because I feel like it does feel like something you're not supposed to say. And it's like everybody forgets that, like, actors have representatives until they literally win awards and mention them. It's like, oh, yeah, right, you do. And you talk to them constantly. Okay, yes. So it was like a shared creative sensibility and somebody who, like, not only understood the things that I wanted to do but cared about those things as well. And, like, there was, like, a genuine, warm sort of personal connection too. That was really useful. That matters to me. Just the feeling that, like, oh, this is somebody who's, like, on the same page about, like, what I want to do professionally and why I want to do it.
It's so important.
Yeah.
It's like, especially, like, it's a good thing you had this person early on in your career, yes, too, because I always think, I mean, even it doesn't matter what profession you're in, you probably run into this type of thing. When you're just starting in a new career, it could feel like you need to say yes to absolutely every opportunity that comes your way. And that's not necessarily the case. But if you don't have the guidance and someone giving you the confidence to say no, you could say yes to too much.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. It's, and, it's okay to, it, not only is it okay, it's actually very important to not say yes to something just because it's the first thing that happened.
I will continue down that path now and ask you for an example of a time where you either had to say no to something for yourself or maybe because it's what you believed was best for the project overall.
I mean, sure, there's like the basic examples of like being presented with an audition for something and going like, no, thank you, sorry, no thanks, I don't want to do that. And I when I decide not to do something, it's usually because I don't think it's the right fit. But the things that make it the wrong fit are that I think it's going to be bad or I don't trust the people making it or I don't trust that the execution will do justice to what the idea is or I get a bad vibe. I don't know. And I try not to, flex the no too often, I suppose, but I think it's important to listen to. Like, if I read something and go, then that's important. Like, I think that's enough of a reason to be like, hey, so I'm not responding to the material.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's important to have that understanding of everything. And also, I just love the emphasis on, you know, trusting the people you work with and trusting their abilities and their material. I'm a big believer that it should always feel like a family. It's like making shows and movies, like, yes, it's a business, but you're putting a lot of yourself and your time into a project like that. And if you don't see the voices around you matching what you want them to be in that sense, it's probably a sign you shouldn't commit.
Yeah, it was just like, well, why do you want to do this in the first place? You know, like, what are the reasons for doing the work that you want to do? Like, it's like, do you want to just make a bunch of money? Or, like, do you want to spend most of your year in a particular city? Or, like, what actually is it about, you know? And identifying what the... There's no wrong answer to that.
No,
you know?
Not at all.
If it's just like, no, I just want to live in one place 9 months out of the year and, like, make as much money as possible. Like, okay, great. There are so many ways to do that.
And that reason can change, too. So I'll ask you, has your reason evolved day one compared to now at all?
No, I think it's pretty consistent, where it's like I just want to be a part of as many things as possible. Like I want a variety of experience, and I want to offer a variety of things. I want to explore as much as I can. I want to travel as much as I can. I want to like meet and connect with other people who like also care about this stuff as much as I can, and I want to be a part of exciting work being made, not just for my own benefit but for the benefit of everybody, and the benefit of everybody seeing it. Where it's like, well, it's always been very important to me to, if possible, be a part of something collective that then encourages more shit from everyone.
I love that mentality so much.
It's like, so ensemble stuff has always been my favorite. And I'm just very greedy, I think. I want to do everything.
I mean, you've gotten pretty lucky in the ensemble department.
Yes, I know, in a
number of senses. I want to ask one question about Santa Clarita Diet.
Please.
But more broadly, all of your earliest projects before Yellow Jackets and also Santa Clarita Diet, of all of those sets, which one would you credit with putting into perspective the most what you would want out of the stories that you would tell and also the on-set environments you would get to work in?
I was in a show in Australia called Homecoming Queens, and I loved it. I loved it. It was like the people making it were amazing, and the set environment was great, and I cared about the characters a lot, and I thought it was like funny and moving and smart, and I'm just really proud of it.
I want to watch it.
It's great.
Sometimes when someone tells me it's an Australian show, or any show from any part of the world for that matter, all the streaming services make it very difficult to access that content.
Yeah. The streaming services are too smart for my VPN now. I don't know. I mean, am I not supposed to say that? They are. It's actually a real problem.
I feel like a lot of people run into that problem. not to bring up a bummer of an experience, but I did want to ask about the cancellation of Santa Clarita Diet. Mm-hmm. In particular, what it felt like from your perspective and also what it taught you about, you know, the business side of things and what it means to be part of a show but to not be in control of that element of it.
Sure. I mean, to be honest, like, it was obviously like, oh, man, okay. But I also, even at the time, I just strongly felt like, wow, what an amazing 3 years that was. Like, what a wonderful experience to have had. And, like, aren't we lucky that that happened at all? You know?
That's such a good way to look at it.
And there's just never any guarantees. Like in this industry, there's definitely never any guarantees. And working in television, where, like, you don't have a concrete guarantee of something being finished when you start, it's just, like, always a possibility in the back of my mind, I suppose. Like, I'm the kind of person where, for me, it's like, well, nothing's happening until it's actually happening, for starters. Like, historically, if I'm auditioning for something, I don't tell anybody. I don't tell anybody about it. And then sometimes even when I'm, like, testing for something or, like, in negotiation for signing for it, I'm like, this is not happening. This, 'cause nothing's happening until I'm actually there. And then sometimes my brain really goes crazy and it's like, well, nothing's actually happening until the job is out in the world.
Oh, no.
You know? And people have seen it. And then it's actually happening. So it's, when Santa Clarita Diet was canceled, it was like, oh, what a shame. But also, we got to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? We got to do that and people liked it. And isn't that amazing?
I never utter the name of someone I'm about to interview until it's in the can because I think I'm going to jinx it.
That's exactly it.
Are you a Scream fan? Because, like, now you got to work with Jasmine and Drew Barrymore.
I know. And Tim. Tim's in one of them, too.
God,
so
yeah.
I haven't seen all of them.
I just forgot about Mickey.
Oh, poor Mickey. I haven't seen all of them. I think I've actually only seen the first two.
Exciting material to explore.
And part of me, like, especially because, like, Jasmine's in the new ones and Mason, who I also know, part of me is like, I'm just saving them. I'm just saving them for a rainy day, which is typical of me, actually. It's like, if I know I'm going to like something, I sometimes take ages to watch it.
This is such an LA comment, but, like, there's been so many rainy days.
There has lately, hasn't there? All right, maybe that's on me. But I like Scream.
It's well worth the binge. Mm-hmm. They're all so good. And Jazz, I still can't get over how good the movies Jasmine is in are, because it's very unusual when you have a long-running franchise like that for the newest installments to be at the top of many people's ranked lists.
Yeah, and I love that.
The quality is just through the roof. All right.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think we have hit Yellow Jackets. Oh, no, I want to ask this question. I wrote down a quote from you that I read in another interview. I think it's something recent. You had said, "It is of paramount importance to me not only to live my life openly for the sake of my own well-being, but to do it in a way that reaches people like me who might be grappling with the same thing." And I have a couple of follow-up questions to that, because I thought it was a beautiful quote.
Thank you.
Follow-up questions that particularly pertain to this industry and how you operate within it. Do you remember the very first time on set that you could feel the power that your own voice could have, where you were able to speak up, spark change, and now that's something that you could do going forward and maybe even on a bigger scale?
Yeah. It's funny. I don't know that this actually answers your question so much, but what it makes me think of is the sort of shift that started to happen after I came out professionally as non-binary was getting gendered correctly at work for the first time, because my expectation had been that that was never going to happen. And not only was that never going to happen, but, like, it wasn't even worth thinking about. Like, it wasn't, like, not worth thinking about to the point of, like, ridiculous, where it's like, don't even bother engaging with whether or not you want that, because it's not happening to you, so don't worry about it. So the sort of, like, psychological adjustment and, like, full body adjustment, really, of, like, of hearing people in a professional setting refer to me correctly, it's not something I did, but that was a really incredibly powerful foundation shift, because I realized that it was going to be okay. That, like, I not only did I not have to hide, but that it was going to be good. You know, like, not only is it going to be fine, it's actually going to be better than you've ever let yourself imagine in your life. So that was quite powerful.
That's a beautiful answer. Some of that also made me think of the quote you recently gave when you were talking about the Emmy situation. Yeah. Because, like, I read those quotes, and it's something that I've said where I want to do away with gendered categories, but then I'll catch myself like, well, then it's just going to be all white men. But that's exactly what you just, like, I have resigned myself to the fact that that's how it's going to go if this change happens. Yeah. And that's what's one of the many things, at least, that's creating that roadblock. And that shouldn't be the case.
I know, and it's sad, right? Because it's like, well, what's buried underneath that is a real, like, fear that equality is not achievable. And I really just don't believe that's true. Like, the work of achieving parity is, like, that's an active, ongoing process. And to do away with gendered acting categories, it's like, well, that's the beginning of that. You know, it's not the end. And then also, like, with that specific example, it's like, well, having one category split by gender and none of the others doesn't fix that at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's funny.
It's like what we were talking about before we started rolling. Mm-hmm. Like, there's other award shows that set the example.
It's fine.
You just got to do it. But
Or not, but I won't be there. Like, you know.
I'm glad that you spoke up the way you did, because that is the type of action that winds up sparking change and hopefully making that change happen at some point in the near future.
Thank you.
I stress near future.
I hope so.
I will believe your quotes and what you said just now make me say believe instead of I hope so, or worrying that it's not going to go the way that I want and that we hope.
Yeah.
I mean that.
Yeah, I love that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
All right, Yellow Jackets, full force now. I want to start with your audition, because I was reading that you originally auditioned for Shauna.
I did.
Just because I'm curious now, how does what you thought Shauna was going to be compare to what Sophie wound up delivering in the final product?
Oh, man. Okay, so a few things. So a bunch of us auditioned for each other's parts.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, fairly common when you're trying to put an ensemble of people together. It's like, oh, maybe you'd be good for this. Oh, hang on, wait, where, and who fits where and what does that look like? And then also sometimes I wonder if I was auditioning for Van the whole time, because Van doesn't have very many lines in the pilot. So later I was like, was I ever auditioning for Shauna? So who's to say? But when I went in, I read Shauna's scenes. And I don't know if I've ever thought about it since, to be honest. The feelings that I had auditioning were, I'm like, I fucking love the script for this pilot. I really hope the pilot gets made, and then I really hope the show gets picked up. And then if I'm not in it, I'm gonna watch it. Like, that's so strongly how I felt. And I'm a massive fan of Karin's. It's when I got the audition email, when I got the email to audition for Yellow Jackets, I took a screenshot of it. I have it on my phone. I replied to the email with Karin Kusama, just in all capital letters. It's the first thing I ever got excited about. So I was excited about, like, the show. And then I remember thinking that it was a bit of a long shot because I didn't think I looked right. Just in terms of, like, matching people together. And then, like Sophie's Shauna. You know, it's just so obvious to me now that, like, Sophie's Shauna and I'm Van and Sam's Misty and Sophie Thatcher's Natalie. It's like everybody ended up exactly where they were supposed to be. But it's funny to think about now, the sort of like musical chairs we did of auditioning for each other's roles. There's a couple of us went in for like two or three different characters, I think. And then a couple of us only went in for the ones that we got in the end. It's funny.
It's wild to consider. But yeah. Whatever that process is, it works because this is one of those very special shows where everyone is just so perfect. Everyone's so perfect, and I just can't believe how perfect the casting of Lauren is now.
I know.
There is a cut between the two of you in episode 8 where, like, the way you're positioned, the way the camera's moving, the way the lighting is hitting, it's just, and the music cue that kicks in, it's just so perfect.
Oh, that's cool.
Perfect. I jumped ahead. I'm jumping back. Mm-hmm. So you get the role of Van.
Yes.
Do you remember the very first thing you did with that role that signaled to you, like, this is right, this is my role, it feels perfect?
Well, so I had gone in for Shauna once, and then I, like, a couple of weeks later, I got a phone call, and they were like, they want to offer you the role of Van instead. And I went, great, who's Van? And then I went back and I read the pilot again, and I was like, oh, I know who Van is. And it's funny, I don't know why I knew who she was so quickly, but I just did. And then I spent the pilot looking for as many opportunities to have as much fun as possible. And then that's what I did for the rest of season one, pretty much, certainly the first half. I like improvising a lot, and I just felt that, like, in a show about a team like this, the central thing would be how these people interact. So in my mind, anytime we were in group scenes together, I was like, well, it's like when you have siblings, right? Or like when you are in a big group of friends, like everybody's constantly bouncing off each other somehow, no matter what. Everybody's always doing something. So it was just fun. I felt like a kid in a sandbox where I was like, okay, so how does Van feel about Natalie? I don't know. I'm going to spend some time thinking about that. Doesn't matter if they ever use it, but I'll think about it.
Oh, I have questions that maybe you can answer then.
Sure.
These don't have to be canon, obviously, mm-hmm. but when I get obsessed with characters, I think about every ounce of their backstory, whether we see that on screen or not. So the first thing I had written down here was Van's home life. So we get a quick glimpse of the situation with her mother. And I have not forgotten the thing you said her mother's drinking and then Ty's sleepwalking at the junket. But anyway, I'm going down another path right now. What do you think Van misses about home the most?
Nothing. I mean, like, that house? I don't think she misses anything about that house. I don't think Van talks about her home life with anybody. I know that, like, in the present day, like, Thaisa as an adult says to Van as an adult, like, I know you and your mother had a complicated relationship, but I don't think that when they're teenagers, anyone knows about it. So it's like, what does Van miss about home? Well, probably misses, like, physical safety or, like, having enough food or, like, having a life. Yeah, had the possibility of having a life. Like, that was something that I thought about a lot in getting ready to do the monologue that Van has in season one right before the wolf attack, where she's like, I want to go back to New York City, please. Like, I want to go back and I want to go back with you. I think what Van misses the most about home is, like, the possibility of something else happening. Where it's like, I can't ever get out of New Jersey and do anything with my life if we're dying here. You know, that, like, it's everything's a closed door. So it's not that Van wants to go back to where she was. It's that Van wants to go back to the possibility of anything else happening.
Have you ever thought about where Van would have gone in life had the plane never gone down?
I suspect that she was based on nothing, by the way. Based on nothing, I suspect this. But I suspect that she was probably leaning on soccer for a scholarship to go to school.
I believe that.
And I think she probably would have tried to go to school in New York. And I think it's probably the kind of thing where she was like, just get me out of this fucking town. Get me out of this town tomorrow, and then I'll figure it out. And I think she, I mean, she's a film nerd. Like, we know that. She's like a storytelling buff and, like, is funny and And I think she, it's like, just like, get her out. Get her out of there.
NYU sounds like a great option.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, get this kid
she
to
could
NYU.
Probably walk onto that soccer team.
Please.
I'm sure that soccer team is great, but
yeah.
What do you think her favorite movie is? What do you think that version of Van would say her favorite movie is? I'm curious to see how it compares to what Lauren told me.
Did Lauren say Bound?
She did say Bound.
I think Bound came out while they were in the wilderness. So I think that's her favorite movie when she gets back. I think her favorite movie is A League of Their Own.
I like that answer.
And I think she likes Thelma and Louise as
Big Gina Davis fan. I respect this.
Yeah.
I respect this very much.
Yeah. She's a gay high schooler in the 90s. She's going to like Gina Davis.
Here's another theory backstory thing I have been thinking about. Mm-hmm. Have you and Jasmine, I guess, ever talked about the time when they first realized they had a connection and wanted to pursue a relationship and maybe also the conversations they've had about when to share that relationship with the people in their lives?
Yeah, we did talk about that. We talked about that a little bit. And it's funny. It's like we've never sort of settled on anything as to, like, what the sort of backstory of their relationship is or, like, the nitty-gritty specifics of it. But it's like where we've landed is, like, well, before the plane crash, they were hooking up. I don't think they were together. I think that they were hooking up and not talking about it.
Oh,
okay. I think it's one of those things where they were like seeing each other and then privately being like, this is nice. Don't worry about it. It's fine. And then probably not saying anything. But I, even before we knew that Van and Thaisa were going to be a couple in the show, like when we were filming the pilot, I was always like, Van really likes Thaisa. Like Van thinks Thaisa is really cool. So it's like, no matter what, that was always buried in there for me, playing her. And then sometimes on my own, I'm like, well, what I think happened is that Van realized that Thaisa liked girls as well and then started teasing her on purpose. And then they probably kissed in the locker room and then never spoke about it. But I usually keep a lid on that.
I get it. I think given what I've seen of their dynamic, I would believe that might be where it started.
Well, that's what I think. But I feel myself becoming like a real, like, actor nerd about it, and sometimes I'm like, okay, fucking chill out.
That's the fun of this. It's not just with like the supernatural theories of it all, but it's also like a lot of people out there get really invested in the characters as people, and the second that happens, you find yourself trying to fill in all the cracks of everything that happened before, after, in between. Like, I do have one question that's an in-between moment and something we see in the show, but it cuts away from. I'm going to jump ahead if I do that too soon, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting into, like, the deeper episodes of the season now, so don't worry. This video will not be released until episode 8 is available.
Yes, because actually, I was going to ask you that, because it's like the one little snippet we do get is, like, the health class flashback at the beginning of 6, and I loved that. Loved doing that. That's also, by the way, the condom thing she does with her hand, I have done that. I did that as about when I was her age, and that was frankly chilling.
Is that a choice you made in the moment and it wasn't scripted?
No, it was scripted, but that's why it was so chilling. Where I was like, I did this. What do you mean? It's crazy. But like, I think about little bits and pieces like that all the time. It's like that. The fun of this show is that like at any point, like, a flashback could happen or be written, and anything that I say or think could be completely null and void.
I think about that with every like, I've done a million interviews for this show, and every single time I come up with a question, I'm like, this could change. And you know what? It should change. Like, the conversation I had with the showrunners and the way that they were talking about, like, either seeds that were planted in season one that did or maybe did not pay off in season two, and how they were, like, including not killing you off, how they were able to adapt and make the show better because of their willingness to adapt.
Yeah, and that's exciting.
It's a good thing. It's
but
a
I
very
also,
good thing.
I also love, in the meantime, being like, well, how do I think Van and Thaisa got together? Like, well, since you asked, actually, here is
prequel
what I think.
Prequel series. Yeah. I would watch that. All right, I'm jumping to episode 7. Mm-hmm. There's a line that I absolutely love. Mm-hmm. I just think it's time we woke up.
Oh.
That is a very, very loaded line of dialogue.
Oh,
so what was it like delivering that? And this kind of ties into the idea of you all not really knowing what's going on and what could happen in the future. But is that the type of line where you have to do multiple takes of it, different deliveries? Or did you have a specific purpose that you were going after there?
I did. Because for me, that that scene is about a real gear shift that's happened because the baby died. Where it's like up until then, with particularly with like the ritual stuff that Lottie has had the team doing that Van has really been clinging to, it's this thing of like, well, but it works because I did survive the wolf attack, and like you were wearing my Dibbo necklace in the tree and you were totally fine and I had my face ripped open. And like, it's just that, you know, she's right because like you were sleepwalking and now you're not anymore. So it's this real clinging that Van's been doing to the idea that like hope is possible out here. And like, if we can't escape, if help isn't coming, then we can survive if we just lean into this thing, even if we don't understand it. But, and then the baby dies and it's like, what am I fucking doing? You know, winter's going on still. We don't have anything more to eat. And the baby died. And like, and it was horrible. And like, Sean is still here, but like, by what margin and for how long? You know, it's just, I do think it's time we all woke up. Like, it's a real, it's not like a giving up necessarily, but it's a shift in the things that she believes and how much hope she's got.
How does that shift impact what happens, I believe, later in that episode when Van just stands by and watches as Shauna nearly beats Lottie to death?
So glad you asked about that, because that through this episode, it's like where Van ends up at the end of season one happens in seven, because it starts with like the baby dies. There's that scene with Taisa where it's like it's time we all woke up. He was always going to die. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what I need. I don't know how to fix this. End of the episode. Shauna almost beats Lottie to death. And then in playing that scene, watching that happen, I sort of physically realized, I was like, oh, this is when Van accepts that they're going to start killing and eating each other. Because it's like, oh, it's going to be violence. Like, what, there's a real deepening point of no return thing that happens there, which is like, oh, it's violence. We've chosen violence. There is no way out but violence. And we are going to start killing and eating each other on purpose, 100%. That is exactly what's going to happen. And she sinks into that then.
My heart was just like crumbling as you were giving that out. Because I feel like, I forget who utters it. I think it's someone in the present day, but I think it's where it's intercutting towards the end of that episode where it's like, you know, they don't know about the cancer at that point, but that Van has lost something.
I'm gonna die. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. Just
like,
breaks.
Yeah. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like, I don't remember who says it either, but it's like, you had a light. It's Lottie.
Yeah, Lottie. She's telling everybody what's been wrong with them.
Yeah.
Oh, the intercutting in that episode is so good.
Yeah. And Lauren and I have both thought about and talked about that a little bit too. The idea that like, that there's a light that gets turned way down for Van by the time she's an adult. It's like, oh, it's there, but it's dimmed a lot. And so then for me, playing her in the wilderness, I'm like, okay, so my job then is to track that dying, like that light turning down. It's like, what dims it, what kills it? And then for her, for Van, who's so funny and so like fierce and so protective and just like so like eager, and so familiar with crisis, like so familiar with like the stakes being high and needing to look after other people and like so familiar with chaos. It's just, over season two, I was like, okay, my job with her becomes figuring out what the parts of you are that die, like what parts of you cannot survive an environment like this. It's like how long can you be funny? How long can you cling to this idea that you've been clinging to? Like what eventually falls away? What do you lose? What gets dimmed down and when? And so that episode is a really good example because it's the loss of the baby and it's the ritual beating where it's like, oh, I know exactly what's going to happen to us now. And there's nothing we can do about it.
Oh, it's so brutal. Yeah. Mike, I thought like after episode six, I'm like, it can't shatter my heart any worse than this. I mean, that's still like a peak episode there, but yeah. It just gets darker and darker.
Have you seen the full thing?
No, I don't get episode 9 until May 15th.
Okay, I'm really glad I asked because I was about to say something. But...
I have not seen the end. You'll know exactly where I got cut off. So okay. Now for episode 8, the playing card idea. So this is actually the moment that we cut away from and we don't see. Do you think Van came up with that idea in order to determine who has to go?
I kind of do. I forget. That's an episode I haven't seen the finished version of, but it's like we don't get to decide. The wilderness decides. Cut away, right? So she's thought about it. You know, she's thought about it a lot, and she's not listening to what any of them have to say because she doesn't care because she knows what they have to do. She's like, no, you're all behaving like children. Like this is so beyond any decision we make. It is obvious what's going to happen now. So she's thought about it and she's presenting it to the group as inevitable because to her it feels inevitable because in like this larger psychological sense it is. So given that the chore cards are something that they have all been doing for that long, I do think it was her idea.
Oh, God.
Because when you cut back to her and she's holding them up, it's not like, oh, what should I do now? She's like, no,
she's the ringleader.
Yeah.
With that mentality, though, what if Ty had taken the queen card? Do you still think she would have been as eager to see it through?
No.
Do you think she would have stopped it?
I don't know. I really have no idea what would have happened. I don't think Van knows either. Like, and in the playing out of that scene, that's Thaisa shows her and nobody else, and that's on purpose. And it was just like, just relief, really. It's like, oh, good, I don't actually have to think about that. Because I don't think she's ready to.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Stresses me out. Stresses me out to no end. The answer to this question might be a no, but because they hide so many clues, I am curious now. Does the card that Van does draw have any meaning?
Okay. I don't know, but I will tell you, the cards that we pull were written down in the script. And, like, we asked on the day, do we have to decide what order the cards? And they were like, no. They made sure that they were in order so that every time each character drew the same one.
So what do you think Van's card means?
I don't know. I've got no idea.
I believe she draws the Joker. And I feel like that might represent what you've been discussing for the past couple of minutes.
Woo!
The dimming of yeah, that light and that kind of being, you know, yeah. I mean, maybe not the end of it for all time, but the end of it in that moment
for her.
Yeah,
there's a real corruption of the beautiful things about her, I think. Like her determination and her passion for storytelling and, like, her care for other people. It's fascinating what happens by the end of this season. It's so interesting.
Oh, I'm so curious. Yeah. I can't wait. And then I'm going to abuse my screeners, and then the Showtime app is going to say, you can't watch this anymore.
Because you can watch them, like, what, five times?
I told Jasmine, I think you're allowed. I didn't even realize this. I think you're allowed to watch them 5 or 6 times, and I usually rewatch and look for particular characters when I prepare for interviews. And when I prepared for her interview, all of a sudden I got like, you have exceeded the maximum, you know, views for these episodes. I'm like, shit.
Brutal.
Just a little brutal. All right. I'm going to end with one more Yellow Jackets theory question and then a positive question because we got into dark territory here.
We did. Sorry.
At the end of episode 8, so we know Javi is gone and Van was kind of the ringleader in terms of seeing all that through. Who at that point do you think Van trusts the most? I have to imagine it comes down to either Ty or Lottie, if not someone else.
Oh, that's fascinating. Because I don't think trust is the right word. I don't know that she does trust Thaisa very much. And then by that point in the season, I don't think she trusts Lottie very much either.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oh, that's curious. That's curious.
Trust is so specific, and that's really interesting. Because I don't think trust is something that Van, allows herself very often. where it's like, it's one thing to like love somebody or to lean on them or to care for them or to look out for them or like, you know, but to trust someone, I think that that is a very like loaded thing for her to feel for somebody.
So happy I had one positive question in my back pocket to end this on.
God, isn't that terrible?
Oh, I mean it is, but it speaks to why the show is so damn good, because it doesn't shy away from exploring those kinds of complexities in a scenario that can be considered, you know, surface level and high concept and fun to watch, even though it's dark. Like, this is the version of that that I like to, like, live with and sit with and think about.
Yeah, me too. Amazing.
All right, my last question for you. Big, broad question. It could be Yellow Jackets or anything else you've done. It's very, very overly sentimental, but it's my new favorite question to end on. So in this industry, we give out two awards to other people, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody says good job to themselves nearly enough, though. Yeah. So whether it's Yellow Jackets or anything you've done, can you give me an example of a scene that now you can look back on and say to yourself, damn, I'm proud of what I did there?
I'm pretty good at watching myself, generally.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard that.
I think there are definitely times where it's like, oh, I'd rather be dead than looking at this. But those times are the exception rather than the rule for me. But it's part of it is that, like, particularly with screen stuff, like filmmaking is inherently very collaborative. So when I'm looking at something that's finished, I'm not just looking at what I did. I'm looking at what, like, a couple of hundred people did. And that is... a celebratory thing for me.
That's
so,
such a beautiful way to look at that.
So, yeah. So, like, watching something finished is like, oh, we did it. Isn't that cool? And then I enjoy my job so much that I do enjoy looking at it when it's done, because it's satisfying. So I don't know that I necessarily have, like, a standout, but I do feel that, like, in general, when I look at something I've done when it's finished, it's not just about me, but I am also able to appreciate what I did at the time because I really cared about doing it and I really enjoyed doing it.
That's such a good answer.
Cool.
I wish it's like, you know, it's shocking and a little upsetting that many have a hard time picking that moment. But I like that way of looking at it, too.
Cool. Thank you.
I don't know. Just respecting the fact that these productions don't come down to just a small handful of people. But there's so many people that
good
contribute to making this happen.
Yeah.
You know what you contributed to making happen? Collider Forces.
I love that. I'm going to take that all the way to the bank.
I am very, very happy we have this show. I have you to thank for it. Huge congratulations on everything you accomplish, everything you will accomplish in the future. The door is always open. Collider Forces is here for you anytime.
Thank you. Oh, my God. Amazing.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.